Crown Court had been out for almost 2 days, and rumour had it that they were hopelessly divided. On the barrister's bench there was talk of hung juries and retrials, as it had been more than 8 hours since Mr. Justice Cartwright had told the foreman of the jury that their verdict need no longer be unanimous. A majority of 10-2 would be acceptable. Suddenly there was a buzz in the corridors, and the members of the jury filed quietly into their places. Press and public alike began to stampede back into court. All eyes were on the foreman of the jury, a fat, jolly-looking little man dressed in a double-breasted suit, striped shirt and a colourful bow tie, striving to appear solemn. He seemed the sort of fellow with whom, in normal circumstances, I would have enjoyed a pint at the local. But these were not normal circumstances. As I climbed back up the steps into the dock, my eyes settled on a pretty blonde who had been seated in the gallery every day of the trial. I wondered if she attended all the sensational murder trials, or if she was just fascinated by this one. She showed absolutely no interest in me, and like everyone else, was concentrating her full attention on the foreman of the jury. The clerk of the court, dressed in a wig and a long black gown, rose and read out from a card the words I suspect he knew by heart. "Will the foreman of the jury please stand?" The jolly little fat man rose slowly from his place. "Please answer my next question, yes or no. Members of the jury, have you reached a verdict on which at least 10 of you are agreed?"
"Yes, we have."
"Members of the jury, do you find the prisoner at the bar guilty or not guilty as charged?" There was total silence in the courtroom. My eyes were fixed on the foreman with the colourful bow tie. He cleared his throat and said, "I first met Jeremy Alexander in 1978 at a CBI training seminar in Bristol. 56 British companies who were looking for ways to expand into Europe had come together for a briefing on community law. At the time that I signed up for the seminar, Coopers, the company of which I was chairman, ran 127 vehicles of varying weights and sizes, and was fast becoming one of the largest private road haulage companies in Britain. My father had founded the firm in 1931, starting out with 3 vehicles, 2 of them pulled by horses, and an overdraft limit of £10 at his local Martin's Bank. By the time we became Cooper and Son in 1967, the company had 17 vehicles with 4 wheels or more and delivered goods all over the north of England. But the old man still resolutely refused to exceed his £10 overdraft limit. I once expressed the view, during a downturn in the market, that we should be looking further afield in search of new business, perhaps even as far as the continent, but my father wouldn't hear of it. 'Not a risk worth taking,' he declared. He distrusted anyone born south of the Humber, let alone those who lived on the other side of the Channel. 'If God put a strip of water between us, he must have had good reasons for doing so,' were his final words on the subject. I would have laughed if I hadn't realised he meant it. When he retired in 1977, reluctantly at the age of 70, I took over as chairman and began to set in motion some ideas I'd been working on for the past decade, though I knew my father didn't approve of them. Europe was only the beginning of my plans for the company's expansion. Within 5 years, I wanted to go public. By then, I realised, we would require an overdraft facility of at least £1 million, and would therefore have to move our account to a bank which recognised that the world stretched beyond the county boundaries of Yorkshire. It was around this time that I heard about the CBI seminar at Bristol and applied for a place. The seminar began on the Friday with an opening address from the head of the European Directorate of the CBI. After that, the delegates split into 8 small working groups, each chaired by an expert on community law. My group was headed by Jeremy Alexander. I admired him from the moment he started speaking. In fact, it wouldn't be an exaggeration to say that I was overawed. He was totally self-assured.